While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to all our listeners tuning in from across the country and beyond the borders of Namibia. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM yet again. That is the home of insightful conversations and meaningful national dialogue. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Reading News Analysis. It is Thursday, the 22nd of January, 2026, and the time is 5 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. As Namibia moves deeper into the new year, the national mood remains one of reflection, exhortation, and growing public scrutiny. Across institutions, communities, and households, conversations are intensifying around how decisions are made, how services are delivered, and how leadership responds to the everyday realities faced by citizens. From governance and accountability to infrastructure readiness, economic resilience, food security, and community well-being, these issues continue to shape public trust and define the country's developmental direction in this critical period. This is On The Reading News Analysis, your trusted platform where headlines meet context and stories are examined beyond the surface. Now, right here, we don't just tell you what's happening. We explore why it matters and what it means for you and I. Now, through our live streaming platforms, we bring you real-time updates on current affairs, politics, business, health, technology, and community development, keeping you informed wherever you are. From 1300 hours to 1430, Monday through Friday, we bring you credible journalism, expert voices, and thoughtful analysis that speaks to the lived experiences of Namibians. On today's program, we focus on key national and regional developments shaping the day, including public service delivery challenges, economic signals, and agricultural, water, and security concerns, as well as community safety issues, and what they signal for the road ahead. You can tune in all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app and stay connected by subscribing to the WhatsApp channel for breaking news, discussions, and audience polls. This is On The Reading News Analysis, your reliable news partner. Now let's get in today's top story. Following direction from the Minister of Rural Development, that is James Sankwasa, has directed all institutions with outstanding municipal bills to settle them during the 2026-2027 financial year, warning that failure to comply will result in forced service disconnection. He added that councillors who owe their local authorities will have their debts deducted directly from their allowances. Another thing that he brought out to the light is something that has been persistent and ongoing for many years, whereby households that owe about 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 Namibian dollars are usually cut off, or their water disconnected, but there are entities who usually owe even up to 300,000, 500,000 Namibian dollars who continue to use water or to have access to water infrastructure yet owing lots of amount. Now, to get into this discussion and speak further thoroughly on it and break it down properly, I'm now joined in studio by Sean. Sean, a very good afternoon to you and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Happy. Thanks for having me.
Sure. This is Sean Garissa, an activist and who's very common to Eagle FM, a voice that's quite also common. Now, Sean, we're talking about the directive that the minister just recently spoke about, and I must highlight that it's not a new thing. It's something that has been persistent and been going on for quite a number of years. We've seen it, I think, back then when I was also still very, very young, I think a teenager. I remember newspaper covering such headlines of entities that owe millions of amounts yet, and thousands of money yet, their water is not disconnected. What do you have to say, Sean?
Yeah, it's true. That is a recurring situation. I think like two, three years ago, or was it 4 years ago, in the just ended council, I remember the same entities owed, in that was in the local authority of Windhoek, around 82 million. And the same situation presented itself. Their services were disconnected and they paid. So part of the reasons why these people continue defaulting is because of the soft gloves they are treated with. The directive by the minister is welcome, but if you look into the directive, it says 26, 20, and within the 26-27 financial year, and failure to settle their accounts, their services will be disconnected, which means we must first wait until to see as to whether they will settle these debts or not. Why is the directive not saying before the end of this financial year? Because you must remember, in government institutions, there's always a surplus amount that is left that is sent back to tertiary. Why don't you compel them to this financial year and implement? Because how many directives has the minister given? How many directives do ministers give and people do not obey those directives? Even though this is supposed to be a cabinet directive or a cabinet position, people do not obey these decisions. So it is very, very important that the minister, maybe it seems as if he's blowing hot water when he just says these things in the heat of the moment or when he says it in isolation, but when he does not tell us how he intends to implement it. Because if it's a policy decision, it must be said that the new financial year is starting in April. You either settle now or you budget for it, so that within the first how many months this is settled. You must remember, on the part of the local authorities, local authorities also owe 2.4 billion to NamWater. Local authorities have obligations they must do. If local authorities come back and say they are also affected in this way, how do they go about that now? So the minister needs to be firm on such directives. They are good, but they must carry weight in terms of implementation and compelling these institutions to say that you must pay. Because when it comes to ratepayers, even if you default for a month, it is immediately closed. There's no two ways about it. You just find your water is closed and you stand up and you make a plan. Or they tell you make arrangements. Why are the institutions not compelled to make arrangements? They must be told you settle now, or you settle a certain part or a certain portion now, or go and make arrangements with these local authorities, and then you settle the rest in the new financial year. Then only will we have trust in such directives. Otherwise, these directives just remain that. They remain directives, and these people will hold their hands and say, we cannot follow directives, because those government institutions also are run by other ministers.
Mm-hmm. Pardon me. You say those government institutions do what?
I'm saying government institutions which he's giving directives now, they also have other ministers who can say that this minister cannot be giving us directives as to what must be done. And if this was decided in consultation with other ministers or other heads of those institutions, then it must be realistic in saying that the financial year is not over. Why must we wait for the 26-27 financial year? This financial year, which will be ending, there will be surplus money. The surplus money, see if you can settle part of these accounts so that local authorities can also function and settle their own debts with NamWater and so forth. The same way local authorities are pressuring residents and ratepayers into settling debts. That must be the same with institutions.
You know, it puzzles me, and I remember so long time ago when I did read about it in the newspaper, like I said, very young then, it surprised me. What a terrible blunder. What an embarrassment to know that our institutions we're supposed to be leading by example, rightly, as the minister puts it, are actually going on owing so much money, and the little poor ones, the households which owe about $5,000, $3,000 are the ones that are being dragged, and the ones whose waters are being closed, whom of course, we have children in those homes, we have elderly people in those homes. It's really such a terrible blunder, you know, to think about it. And I think it quite comes to question, Sean. I'm busy asking myself, all this while, you're telling me that there's never been really somebody who was bold enough to ensure that this does not repeat itself and to make sure that those entities ensure that they pay their amounts. But before you get into a response to that, let's just make room for a scheduled commercial break, Sean, and we'll be back to tackle it. Get social with us on...
Spend less and get more with Budget Beaters at WB. Get a 2-liter Rietfontein juice for only $36.99. 5 kg nice rice for just $87.99. 4 kg Kadila chicken portions for $189.99. And 2 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for only $57.99. See more month-end specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Okay, Sean Garissa, we are back now.
Yes. Mm. So, you see, why that is the case when it seems as if why nobody is bothered that institutions owe so much money and local authorities are just concentrated on residents and poor residents and ratepayers is that, you know, the local authorities have lost the premise of their mandate. Local authorities are supposed to offer a service, but now they have become profit driven and they started being run like businesses. And in that, they only concentrate on residents and targeting residents that they have forgotten. Until a young man came into Windhoek, a local authority into that municipality, and targeted these institutions and switched off their electricity. That young man must be kept. He must be commended for that. You see, when Job Amupanda did that in 2021-22, a lot of financial recovery was done within that local authority. But here, like even in 2025, you would see City of Windhoek coming in print media and say there were signs of improvement in their financial position, in that they collected or they had a surplus of 47 million. But the reason behind that will only be because they've intensified debt collection from residents, mm-hmm, and ratepayers. No mention of governmental and other business institutions. That is what they do. They don't concentrate on the big fishes. They concentrate on these innocent people. And even with that, we in 2023, we proposed addressing the circumstances that lead to people going into these financial situations. Mm-hmm. We said that, look, people are defaulting over and over again. Pensioners are defaulting over and over again. Writing off pensioner debts does not help when you don't address the core issue. What is that? Is it because perhaps if your estimation is it because maybe we must create a ceiling so that people do not that they cannot manage? Because what is the point in somebody owing you 100,000 that they will never be able to pay, and now you just keep the person in a debt bracket and just frustrate them with that just because you can manipulate the interest or the fact that they are in that situation, as opposed to writing off the debt and creating an environment where that person is able to honor their municipal obligations monthly. You know, if you have 200,000 people in Windhoek or in 2,000 people in a local authority or in a village council not paying because they are in a debt, do you prefer that, or you prefer 200,000 people or 2,000 people making a monthly payment? The revenue that comes with that monthly payment of 200,000 people or 100,000 people in Windhoek, as opposed to just relying on a debt and saying 1.2 billion is owed to us by the residents of Windhoek, you are just looking at that figure, but you are not creating an environment where you make it easy for people to live and to be able to honor their debts. So because they are so fixated on money, they forget that these institutions are defaulting and they, mm-hmm, must find a way to recover. And even when they are faced with this situation, the minister comes out and he says they are giving them the whole financial year. No, it must be the same raft extended to the institutions that is extended to the residents. Then only the City of Windhoek, local authorities across the country will better their financial situation and they will be faced with less financial risk going forward.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, another area that comes to my mind is that, you know, for instance, when it comes to rainy season and there needs to be bridges put up here and there, and of course, many things that need to be done, what if even pipelines that need to be replaced and all that kind of stuff, maintenance or so to say. But of course, because it's big entities are not paying their money what they owe. And I want to think that residents that probably that to put together might just be another fraction of what really is owed compared to the big entities. And then so it then causes that, you know, that there's not enough money to actually fix and this and this and that because of this lack of this huge amount that is owed to even NamWater itself, which supplies now to the local authorities, to the municipalities and to all the stuff. And then also that then creates a loophole, you know, that a long chain of economic strain, let me put it like that, which then is not able to be addressed. Now, Sean, I'm just wondering, how then do we perhaps hold them accountable to ensuring that the right thing is done? Is there something really that you think perhaps individuals can even do for that matter?
Yeah, that system is called water reticulation. It's an entire network of what goes into providing water, those pipes and all those things. I was saying last year to the maintenance of that process was around 20 million. But look, as ratepayers and as residents, we also have a responsibility towards these local authorities. But the local authorities' core mandate is service delivery. You see, when you come out and say we have made recovery of how much money and money because we have strengthened our debt collection, we have appointed debt collectors. But you don't mention service delivery. You must also say our service delivery has improved. You know, when you subscribe to things like these TV channels, when your channels become boring, people do not pay that much because they see there's nothing. So there must be quality in your service so that can also contribute to more people honoring their obligation. You understand?
Mm.
So this is not happening. Even if people are paying, the service is still poor. As we are speaking, the whole of Katutura, and even at workplaces, there was no water. There was no water, and water is just being in patches, being restored in areas. Still now, people are SMSing and calling and saying, City of Windhoek, what is happening there? City of Windhoek is making announcements on their social media pages, and those people who are in the community, some of them are not on the social media pages. Some of them are not even having access to certain platforms that they use. So these are the kinds of things where people, this city of Windhoek did not improve. That's why Sean is going to throw waste. That's what happens. But if you improve this quality of service, the way you are improving debt collection, the way you are increasing tariffs, then people will see a need to put their money also there. So as much as we have a responsibility, it's a give and take thing. We have a responsibility towards these local authorities. The local authorities have a responsibility towards us. But now it seems as if the local authorities are, regardless of what, they just want the money. And only most, they are leaning towards the residents more than the institutions. And even when solutions are brought forth, the solutions sound like a far-fetched dream because they are not lending. You must be firm and you must implement and say now and before the end of the month, because these institutions are in position to pay that money and they must be exemplary. They must set the example for the residents to follow.
They must set the example for the residents to follow. I think at this particular point, Sean, I would want to ask you, in all the time that you've been an activist, has it ever come to a point where you see that, yes, definitely, as I speak for the people, as I advocate for the people, that I have seen tangible results in this particular area, that this need was actually met because we have been pushing and, of course, it has not been busy. Is that something that you can say and reflect back and say, at least there were some results that came out of all the effort that we have done?
Yes, definitely there's been a lot of results. In fact, it has maybe been like 80%, because even with this water situation, you will realize that in last year we reported our local authority to the ECB for disconnecting electricity for water bills. These are things that were done. You know, there are certain practices that local authorities do just to you see, the thing is always about catching the residents so that they can make payment, and it ends there. It doesn't go beyond there. And we were saying from the beginning that, guys, the people get into these positions because the people are simply not having money. These pensioners, the people are not employed. So what's the point in expecting water from a stone? So let's create the circumstances so that these people are able to at least attain the basic needs. What did we propose? We proposed that, like with our local authority, we proposed that they put in water meters so that people can move the water meters from this conventional meter so that you pay as you use. If you have $100, you use 100, you buy that water, and it ends there.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is just rates and taxes. As opposed to me having that conventional water, and then I'm just using, and my water bill is just going up, and later you come and close my everything. So those City of Windhoek, they started a program which they started in 2024, where pensioners were put on asked to register for a program where they get water meters.
Yeah,
which is a better thing. It is an attainable thing. You see, because it's better for somebody, you know, even the usage of water is not that much. And you know why I think local authorities are not keen on that? Because clearly people are able to manage their water. We even forced them to stop this estimation of water. They used to estimate water to say that in December, these people, 2024, they use this amount of water. When you go to next year, December, when you go to the north and you come back, you see that while there was nobody for the whole December at home, the estimation is the same. That was because they were just estimating that the consumption might be like this. They have stopped
reading. Yeah.
Meter reading has resumed again. You know, for a long time in Windhoek, we were not seeing meter readers. People were there. I don't know where were they, but now we started seeing meter readers again. So these are just some of the things that we've done. We've done a lot of things that have been successful. You know, we have fought electricity successfully.
Yeah.
It was subsidized. For 2 years, there was no electricity hike. We are still on recently, or in 2 months, you will see that ECB and NamPower will announce that there will be a multi-year electricity hike, meaning that electricity will not go up every year, every second year. Those are the kinds of things we've been proposing, and they have a huge impact on the social, on the everyday person in Namibia. Although, you know, people do not understand these things, but the impact it has on us is a very good thing. And I'm very happy and I'm very satisfied with what we do. We do these things to improve the lives of the ordinary people who have no voice. We do this thing to improve the life of all of us as Namibians. So we don't also just want to be complaining. We also want to be solution-based. That's why we also seek solutions. We do our research. We speak with people with expertise. And then when we are confronting or asking for accountability, this is what we do.
Yeah.
I know sometimes some people take it wrong because they feel as if we are stepping on their toes. They feel as if we are exposing things that we're not supposed to be exposed. But this is for the betterment of all of us as a society.
Correct. Sean, we wish you all the very best and the strength, of course, to continue to fight for the people and, of course, to advocate for the people, because it takes a lot of strength, I can imagine. And, of course, it takes a lot of consistency and discipline as well. But thank you so much for making time for us, Sean.
Thank you very much,
Okay. And there you had it from Sean Garisab. He's an activist, also just giving his input and, of course, highlighting that the effort have not gone to waste in how they advocate for people and being in activism, which I know can be quite a lot of work. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace and make room for a scheduled commercial break. And then we'll be back shortly. See you soon.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
staff. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? 2 kilograms real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only $109.99. 5 kilos top score super maize meal, $62.99. 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread brick, just $13.99. And pay $34.99 for 750 grams U-Brand original mayonnaise. USave, where good food costs less.
Part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Special admission consideration, undergraduate applicants. UNAM invites eligible Namibian applicants to apply for special admission consideration for selected undergraduate degree programs for 2026. Now, this applies to applicants who narrowly missed standard admission requirements but meet the specified point thresholds and subject criteria. Admission under this category is conditional, and students must meet set academic conditions by the end of the year to continue their studies. Special admission does not apply to professional or diploma programs. Details are available from the Office of the Registrar. That is the University of Namibia, Office of the Registrar. And I will resume with our news. Deputy Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, Ruthie Masake, has called on Namibian youth to take an active leadership role in transforming the country's agricultural sector, saying the future of agriculture depends on meaningful youth participation. She made those remarks while addressing young people at Onipa Agri-Youth Engagement in the Oshikoto region. The deputy minister said her message aligns with National Development Plan 6, that is NDP 6, and the Swapo Party Manifesto, which prioritize climate-smart agriculture, youth-led agribusiness, value addition, and productive land reform. Now, ahead of the engagement, Ruthie Masake paid a courtesy visit to the governor of Oshikoto region, that is Saki Kathindi, who emphasized that nearly 80% of the region's population are communal farmers. Governor Kathindi stressed that agriculture must remain central to national development discussions in line with the head of state directive. He further raised concerns over persistent water challenges in the region, noting that many boreholes are affected by salinity and that communities continue to struggle with access to potable water. While conditions may appear stable during the rainy season, he warned that water shortages intensifies from June threatening livelihoods and food security. Governor Kathindi called for stronger leadership collaboration, improved strategies, and adequate resources in order to address these challenges. He welcomed the deputy minister's visit and reiterated the importance of collective efforts to ensure farmers' benefits and food security remains a national priority. Let's now take a listen to the deputy minister, Ruthie Masake, as she engaged the people.
Be with the Oshkoto youth, and thank you very much for inviting me, the youth of Oshkoto. I would not refuse because I have started the journey of seeing the youth in all the regions. The program has started in Zambezi, you have seen it, isn't it? So I'm impressed today, honestly speaking. Program Director, Honorable David Dikambode, Honorable Viho, a councillor constituent, a member of the National Assembly, I'm told, congratulations.
Yeah.
Honorable William Anukenya, a member of parliament, dedicated farmer. I'm proud to hear that. And to inform the Namibian people that I am closer to the a dedicated farmer. Please, Honorable William Anukenya. Mr. Martin Antindi, regional and local community leaders present here today, traditional leaders, if they are in the meetings, representative from the youth forum and organization, young farmers, young entrepreneurs, ladies and gentlemen, not forgetting the key stakeholder who are the media. Good afternoon once more. I'm deeply honored to stand before you today in this area of Omsati, Oshkoto, Onipa, Agri-Youth Engagement. Last night when we arrived, I said I'm going to enjoy this area. For the first time, I did not have a dream. I slept like a queen, I would say so. You hear me there? No dream, no fear. This is how safe Oshkoto is. Thank you very much for the night that I enjoyed. We meet at this powerful moment, the dawn of 2026, from the fresh warm of the festive season, carrying forward the energy and resolve to make this year one of the bold, an action year. An action, the year of touch, where I want youth to be involved in working, in talking their work in agriculture. We really transformed. Just last week, I addressed the Zambezi Agri Youth in Daba in Zambezi region, where the passion of our youth reminded me today, Namibia's agriculture's future depends entirely in the youth. This lies in the hands of the youth today. The heart and the mind of the youth people, I like seeing all the youth present today in this hall, where I was not expecting that the hall would be full. I thought maybe I'll be gracing few individuals. I'm humbly honored. My heart is rejoicing. After an inspiring presentation we have heard from Ogashana, DRC, on regional opportunities, young one, did you listen to what I heard today? There's a free training, capacity building on poultry farming with zero collateral. They even opened a door saying that the moment we are done is what we are here for today. They will take 10 names and train you for free. Can you give them a round of applause? Thank you very much, Oshana, for that gesture. From our regional youth officer on the program, and from Honorable Amtenya on the narrative that they shared about the farming they conduct on the daily basis. In that statement, they said business is there in agriculture. If you want to be rich within 2 months, You can do so by farming poultry, right? When you sell eggs, you know there were some calculations that were given to us. Whereas we ended finding 2 million on the table. Wow. Wow. Oshkoto, you are blessed. You are indeed blessed having a leader who can attest to that. To me, it was a very wonderful testimony that we can touch. Honorable Amtenya is not far from us. It's nearby, isn't it? I'm reminded of one profound truth. Namibia's agriculture, fishery, water, security, and the land reform will be led by the youth, or there will be no progress. I would hope today, Oshkoto youth, you are ready to get the board. The future of this ministry lies in your hands. Our parents have shown us the way. Our parents have taught us the way to live. Agriculture is the key aspect into life. Can I have a joke with you? Can you imagine all of us today, we are dressed in two different fashion clothes? Where do they come from? Agriculture. When I look at you, I have different faces. Smiling. I don't see any skeleton in the room. But I see handsome, beautiful individual. Why? We are eating food from where? Agriculture. Is it? So agriculture is the key of life. Ladies and gentlemen, government's vision for our youth is ambiguous and uncompromising. You are not meant to be a spectator on the sidelines or not a passive recipient of the age. You are supposed to be an active partner, innovative producers, and decisive leader in driving Namibia's economy renewal. We are in the process of renewing ourselves, isn't it? We need to be revitalized and see agriculture away. Under the 6th National Development Plan, NDP-6, agriculture, fishery, water, and natural resources stands as a core productive sector for job creation, for food security, export growth, and youth empowerment. NDP-6 still demands that we shift decisively from subsistence farming to commercial farming. Climate smart and high value production. We need to champion youth-led agriculture businesses. I'm happy that few have said it that one. Agro-processing and value addition. We can only realize that one once we are involved. Young one of Oshkoto, let's get involved and change the livelihood and create jobs. We should not go there and ask for a job, but job is there with you. The ball is there. Kick it and get food on the table. We need to build robust value climate change. Build robust value chains from soil and water to make market and exports. We need to ensure that land reform drives genuine productivity, income, and generation wealthy. This vision is powerful to reinforce by our only SWAPO party, Manifesto Implementation Plan. We are clear. And for your information, the SWAPO party election manifesto plan is already transmitted into NDP-6. I want to believe all the ministries have drawn their own strategic plan, which is informed by the NDP-6. We therefore pledge to extend youth access to land, affordable finance, and practical skills, strengthening youth cooperatives and enterprises. As I was listening here, one cooperative has been opened in Oshkoto. Give yourself a round of applause. We need to accelerate rural development through value addition and market leakages. Make empowerment real
economic, and lasting, not merely symbolic. Let's not just talk about the agriculture. Let's do it. Let's get involved. In the instance, we are working to make agriculture and fishery not only attractive and profitable, but modern, innovative, and future-proof for young Namibians. It's the only way. Young people of Oshkoto, your real gene is not exceptional. It's well-positioned for this transformation. Oshkoto burst fast, fertile soil. As I was coming, one could say that there is a fertile soil here. So I would want the young one to tap into that one. Since Oshkoto burst fertile soil, relatively reliable rainfall in many areas of Oshkoto, strong traditions in stubborn crops like pearl millet, which is known as mahangu to our local languages, sorghum, legumes, and livestock keeping, you are therefore deserve rural communities benefits that provide both neighbors and ready local markets. Strategic transport, links of moving to producers and to the market. Not forgetting growing potential in horticulture that we need in our daily lives. Fruit production is to open for the youth to be engaged and even emerging into ventures like mushroom production and diversified entrepreneurs in many different skills related in the agriculture field. Oshkoto is no longer an ordinary region. It is a powerhouse in the market. Government wants to see young leading in crop production, livestock improvement, and feed production. Horticulture, fruit orchards, and vegetable farming, agro-processing, milling, packaging, value-added products, climate-resilient plagues that turn drought challenges into subsistence success. Now, to the question which is burning in every person's mind as I speak to you. What real support exists and how do we claim it? I want to believe you have this question. How do we claim it? What support do you get? Right? The National Youth Development Fund, launched in September 2025, a $257 million for 2025-2026. Apart from the $500 million, which is capitalization, is a transformative force. I would want to share, how do we get hold of this? It is being administrated through the Development Bank of Namibia, which is known as DBN, AgriBank and Environmental Investment Fund. It targets Namibian youth aged to 18 to 45 years. Have you applied? It's a question that you don't need the answer, but you can ask yourself, did I apply? What is the response? With these registered businesses, you need to have a clear marketable business, a cooperative or any agricultural venture business. You can tap into this million money. It's there for the young ones. We therefore, it offers collateral free loans. You don't need to be scared of the collateral, which is a threat to many young ones, is it? Where will I get a collateral? It's very low interest rate at 2 to 4%. Funding from 60,000 to 200,000 for starters, whereas you are going to be asked to pay a little bit of 2% from the 60 to 200,000. Have you applied? It's a question. Are you in the age of 18 to 45 years? So the room is still open for you. When you think after 1 million for light project, you are expecting as a return to 3 to 4%. Very low. It's only Namibia that can do that, right? Oshkoto Yamas, are you ready? Has the project been drawn? But repayment up to 5 years. The 2%, the 4% that you are going to take, you are supposed to pay it within the next 5 years. 5 years. It's a very big generous that is given to us. So you are still given a 1 year without starting training. When you are doing the process of programming yourself, you are given 12 months without paying. You can start in the next year. What a wonderful government that you have. Priority goes to agriculture and agro-processing, poultry, horticulture, fodder production, fruit trees, diversified agri-businesses, climate resilient projects. Actually, the area where Oshkoto is the area where agriculture can shine. Agriculture can shine in Oshkoto because there are many different ways you can enjoy agriculture programs. Let's go inside now. The applications are ongoing with no present date. Anytime during the course of the day, go and apply. AgriBank is waiting for you and all other institutions that I've mentioned. The fund is moving the youth from dreams to deeds. If you once had a dream, you can realize it with the funds. Creating jobs and employing your fellow youth who are not coming forth. Building resilience and capacity building within Namibian young ones. We'd want to have a nation which is led with capacity. So that Namibia should not be stolen. So agriculture puts a call to young ones to join me into farming. The Development Fund, the Development Bank of Namibia, supports high input projects, including large scale agribusinesses, value chain infrastructure, and import oriented ventures. Young groups and cooperatives are aged, therefore, to prepare a strong, bankable proposal, especially those with the partnership. AgriBank then remain your steadfast for any proposal, for as long as profitable, is bankable. Young of Oshkoto, rise today and be in the pot of honey. The agri-pioneer system or scheme called for the young, which is aged from 18 to 35, with a relaxed term, low interest rates, starting at 7%. It's not the same as the one that I have explained. Reflexible grace period of offtake agreement instead of the strictly collateral and tolerance for the shift falls to help the young one to start and scale up their businesses. Young agribusinesses loans, production financing, equipment, and infrastructure support. Affirmative action loan scheme for land acquisition and resettlement. I would echo much on the resettlement when we go to the second round. Within our ministry, we continue delivering into the following course that I would want the young ones to pay attention. We further extend and give extension services, mechanization, and training programs in various skills. Our offices are open to all young ones for information. irrigation and green scheme opportunities are available within our offices once approached. Land allocation with post-resettlement support, aquaculture and fishery initiative adaptable to inland regions. You have seen I introduced my team today. Should it be that you have a question on the land resettlement, on aquaculture, and other questions, the team is here to unfold and to give you guidance. But let me be direct. Excess demand, preparation, strong business plans, registered cooperatives or enterprises, discipline is a key aspect. Not forgetting accountability on open this door wideness. Whenever business it is in exposure, you really need to be disciplined. You need to take the word accountability into an action course. As we transition to our interactive dialogue and panel discussion, this is the moment of real conversation. Discussion. The government do not have all the answers you expect today, but rather, and policy must be shared by the youth lived experiences on the ground of Oshkoto. We are going to share ideas today. Your ideas can be part of the decision making. I'm happy because there are leaders who are part of the decision making at high level. I therefore urge everyone today to speak openly about your challenges, drought, market access, and the skill gap, and land barriers. Propose practical solutions to grounded problems. Offer ideas to realign the policies that we use in Namibia and program for greater impacts. This is how we co-create responsive, effective governance that saves you as custodian within Namibia. Let me conclude with these changes to you. 2026 must be a year you shift from waiting to working. From waiting to do what? To working. From accessing opportunity to owning them. From accessing opportunity to owning them. From portable to unstoppable productivity. Agriculture, fishery, water security, and land reform are no longer yesterday's sector. They are tomorrow's engine. We grow wealthy and pride. Let us seize this year in a style with unshakable confidence, unbreakable collaboration, and unrelenting commitment. Oshkoto's youth, the soil is fertile, bear with me. The moment is now, and the young Namibian, you must be ready to be accountable for your own impact. We are there to give you direction. We are there to rise together. Let's live together. With these few remarks, allow your Deputy Minister to say thank you. Give me whatever you have. Let me do it again.
And there you had it.
Eagle FM, let you express minister. Your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Beloved of Skoto Youth, and thank you very much for inviting me, the youth of Skoto. I could not refuse because I have started the journey of seeing the youth in all the regions.
And there you had it from the Deputy Minister, that is Ruth Maseke, speaking at the engagement, encouraging the youth to participate in agro-processing, in agriculture, in climate-resilient farming and diversified agricultural activities, also in crop and livestock production. Now, it's one thing, of course, for youth specifically to go and acquire all the necessary skills that are needed, and yet again, there needs to be a time also when they need to realize that they need to be more active and proactive and be engaging and in putting in the work that needs to be done. Of course, agriculture might not be a passion for everyone, but then if we all go about saying it's not my passion, then I guess all of us will sit around and stuff. So there needs to be those who are very bold. And you do find people who are passionate about farming. And one thing that I've also noticed that it's very important is that, parents, especially, young parents, also young adults, to expose their young ones to many different things. For some children, they might have develop a passion for agriculture, but that they will only notice that when they are influenced or when they are taken to places where they can see their stuff, where they can see, they can be able to engage with the goats, with the sheep, where they can see the cattle, where they can see even the chicken themselves. Some of them may grow up, and especially in the teenage life, some of them actually may grow up and be interested in that and want to play their role in that. But it takes parents sometimes to expose them to that, because obviously the city life sometimes is not what they are going to grow up to thrive in, but rather when they are exposed to agricultural related activities. So it's quite necessary that the young ones are introduced to such. And they grow up to become very good farmers. They grow up to become very good livestock farmers. They grow up to have good gardens and become horticulturists. You know, they grow up to do really good, more than even subsistence farming that we were normally used to. That you know, with one staple food over and over in a whole big field. They grow up to actually diversify. Why? Because they are learning and they are seeing, and they are learning sometimes not just from those close to them, not just from those within the same community, but they learn from people far and wide, even in other countries. They see their experience and then they take it for themselves. But of course, yeah, that with that being said, let's pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly now with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Do stay tuned. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back now for News Beyond the Borders of Namibia. We're starting off regionally, moving over to continental news, thereafter international news. Now let's take a listen to Gauteng's positioning itself as an investment destination at the World Economic Forum.
It's positioning itself as an investment destination and a gateway into Africa at the World Economic Forum in Davos. SABC News reporter Gloria Sefakwamusi is there and caught up with acting group CEO of the Gauteng Growth and Development Agencies, Thembiso Dlamini. She asked her about the unique proposition Gauteng is presenting to investors.
As Gauteng, we take WEF Davos as a platform to really position Gauteng as a premier investment destination. And indeed, you've just said that Gauteng is an economic powerhouse. I mean, 35% contribution to the country's GDP. We are a small province by landmass, but we've got a population of about 26% of the total population of the country. So in terms of workforce, we are well positioned for investment. I think we're here just to say Gauteng is open for business. In actual fact, we're using it as a platform to really invite investors. We have our Gauteng Investment Conference, which is going to be held in April in Johannesburg from the 9th to the 10th of April. And we're here to basically say we're open for business. We've got projects that are ready in automotive sector, agro-processing. We've got some of the key projects from an infrastructure point of view. So basically we're here to say let's collaborate, within the theme of just having that dialogue to say how do we then collaborate greater for inclusive growth.
So we've seen on a national level South Africa's ratings, sovereign ratings being upgraded by S&P. We've seen FATF getting South Africa off the grey list. How are we leveraging that, using this newfound macroeconomic stability to try and sell Gauteng as a gateway into Africa?
So one of the key things that we have done is the Gauteng Investment Conference, it is that vehicle that we have put together as Gauteng to say it's no longer enough for us to just stay a bit at home and hoping that people will see us. So we're actually leveraging the shifts that have happened to really say to people, we are open for that business. So the Gauteng Investment Conference is positioned such that we're calling investors and companies that would like to expand even into the continent, because we are actually leveraging instruments such as the ACFTA, to say we're open to doing business in the continent, but those investors that are ready for expansion into the continent, Gauteng is that gateway. We really are using partners on the ground. In fact, before this, we were in a trade mission in Italy where we're seeing investors that are already investing in Gauteng, but those that want to come. As a GGDA, we position ourselves as that agency which handholds the investors when they come to the country. We make it very easy for them to register and to get all the processes in place. So I think for us, taking advantage of these shifts simply means that we've got to be out there. We've got to be out there in the world. We've got to partner with the likes of media. We've got to partner with other global media agencies as well to say, Gauteng is open for business. Let's engage.
So what are the specific projects, bankable projects that you're presenting to institutional investors this week?
So we are here to say, some of the key sectors that we have in Gauteng is automotive. Ford is already on the ground. We have our special economic zone, automotive special economic zone, where we've got we're training SMEs to actually provide components to the OEMs. But we're also saying we're open for agro processing. We've seen a couple of companies that are interested to come and set up in Gauteng, but also capacity building of some of the businesses on the ground. The other area that we're looking at, we want to expand in the area of data centers. We've got our innovation hub, the only innovation hub in the country as well as in the continent. We want to actually explore AI technology coming up with data centers that are going to service the country as well as the SADC region. We're looking at our special economic zones as centers of these investments. So we've got the OR Tambo SEZ, which is already operational. We're now busy with Precinct 2, where we're actually calling investors, whether in the manufacturing space, to come in, whether it's the food agro-processing, like I said. We have another one, the Val Special Economic Zone. Fortunately, we're also looking at it from an aeropolis point of view, where we already have an investor looking at an airport around the Val, which would just make logistics much better. We do have another one at the West Rand SEZ, looking at obviously green hydrogen and energy alternatives for the province. You would know that one of the critical challenges that we have is around energy efficiencies or energy security for the investors. They all want to know, what about the energy? Because some of the investments that we're bringing requires that the country has or the province has got that energy security. What about water? What about issues around safety and security? What about issues of labor? So those are the things that we as the GGDA are positioning ourselves to actually assist the investors. But those are largely the areas that we're looking at.
So you spoke about AI, and AI it's a big issue here at the World Economic Forum. How are you then preparing your staff to make sure that they are prepared for the work of the future, to make sure that, global investment that are coming in, we are able to meet those standards?
So as we start positioning our innovation hub as that AI technology and innovation center, we're utilizing it to be that leader in the transitioning. But the most important thing or important partner that we're bringing on board also the universities, so that we're able, at home, so that we're able to begin to train staff. But our interest as well is how do we then begin to transition our small businesses to take or leverage AI. Hence, at the Innovation Hub, we do incubate small businesses, and to scale, we're now bringing in partners to actually start training them to leverage issues of AI.
High demand skills in South Africa's job market.
In 2026, some careers may actually be easier to land than others. A new guide from recruitment experts highlights where the demand is in South Africa's job market, from healthcare and technology, even to finance. Certain skills are certainly in high demand. Entry-level positions, however, remain highly competitive. Paul Byrne, Head of Insights and Customer Success at PNET, joins us now to get a hold of South Africa's most in-demand jobs in 2026. Paul, good morning to you. Happy New Year and all those nice things still. It's past the 16th, I can still say it though. What are these jobs? What are the most in-demand jobs we've got in the country?
Let me start by saying we've actually ended last year on a really positive note with three successive months of some good, strong job growth through South Africa. And that's across September, October, and November last year, showing 7%, 3%, and 6% increases in the amount of jobs when we're looking at a year-on-year comparison. So we're starting this year on a really positive note, and I'm hoping that that is sustainable. But to come back to your specific question about which of those jobs are most in demand, we've had a good look at all of the data over the last 12 months to try and predict what 2026 looks like. And there, again, is some positive news talking about the fact that across 12 different sectors, we can see that there is this availability of jobs. And on one side, it's starting with very generalist type jobs that transect a number of different industries. And the top ones, the top job availability there is to your business and management type roles, your sales roles, finance, IT, admin office and support, and marketing. And then when we look at the jobs that are very more that much more specific to a particular industry, we're looking at jobs across medical and health, building and construction, maintenance and repair, architecture and engineering, warehousing and logistics, and manufacturing and assembly. So again, that creates a really good cross-section in terms of what it is that we can see is happening.
Yeah, and I guess that begs a question, though, and somebody might ask, what is this based on? How do we know for sure that these are the jobs that people are looking out for this year? And how is it determined?
Well, we operate a number of different platforms here in South Africa. The biggest one that we look at our data from is pnet.co.za. It is an employment website, and basically we have job advertisers that are placing jobs on a monthly basis, and we've got job seekers that are looking for those jobs on a monthly basis. And we act as the marketplace that puts the two together. And we're advertising the region of about 250,000 jobs per year from our customers, and we've got in the region of just over 7 million job seekers.
Sure.
So it's analyzing this data that really helps us understand what the trends in the market are, and that's where we actually collect this information from. And again, it's quite interesting when we look at that data to take a different angle on it and understand out of those jobs which are in demand, which ones have the highest competition, and what jobs have lower competition, because that actually makes quite a big difference in terms of what's happening again in the success rate of actually finding jobs in those spaces.
Let's...
And typically when we look at the data, what's happened is there's generalist roles that go across different industries. Again, going back to business and management, sales, finance and IT. Specifically, a lot of those jobs are in high demand, but there's high competition for them as well. But when we get into some of the other jobs like engineering some finance and certain IT jobs and medical and health, we find that they're in high demand, but there's a lot less competition there. And some of those IT roles, for example, business analysts, data analyzing, IT project management, software and development, systems analysis, these are jobs of the future. Some of your engineering jobs, your civil and structural engineering jobs, your consulting engineers, your quantity surveyors are jobs of the future. So we see this sort of long tail sort of trend and expectation that these jobs will continue to drive this high demand in the local economy.
Yeah, I mean, that data also suggests then that even the roles with what some would consider lower educational requirements are still becoming harder to secure just purely because of the intense competition for them.
Very much so. Very much so. And some of those jobs that you would be talking about would be your call center operators, sales roles, cashiers, junior property agents, even some jobs within warehousing and logistics are becoming difficult to secure based on exactly what you say, a lot of competition for those. Very important that we understand this this particular data.
Paul, how do we leverage this, though, that space that really exists between what is required, what we have as a country, and try and leverage the two to try and find a midway point, do you think? From all the insights you've seen, all the data you've been able to process, what do you think could be some of the ways? And I know this could be purely subjective.
Absolutely. I think it is subjective at this stage, Arbile. But I think probably the most important thing is that we've got to look at what these jobs of the future are looking like. And I think, going through these jobs that are listed that are in high demand where there's a low supply. And again, I go back to the list of the civil engineers, the consulting engineers, and within IT, your business analysts and software developers. And I think what we've got to really make sure that we're doing there is getting people to understand the importance of building their skill sets. So whatever industry they're going into, building skills is becoming one of the most important factors of any one of us that are in a career at the moment. It's how we're going to progress. It's where the world is moving to in terms of understanding what is actually going to be needed into the future. So skills development and making sure that I'm in a habit of continued education becomes critically important in terms of getting ahead in one's career.
Yeah.
So really, going back into that is just making sure that you're staying ahead of the trends and understanding where these different careers might be taking us.
If I'm correct, Paul, even some of the data has middle management and supervisory roles as being in both high demand and in high competition. I mean, do you think that that creates kind of bottlenecks when it comes to career progression, you think?
High competition always will, because they're going to be that many more job seekers applying for the same role. And again, I go back to the point of them saying that those people that really are serious about their careers need to put that extra effort into just continuing to build those skills, because that's what's going to differentiate them from anyone else that's looking for jobs at the time. So I cannot stress that point importantly enough. But yes, there's a lot of competition out in those more generalist roles. Putting yourself out there in front is going to be really important.
I thought jobs in artificial intelligence would be far greater at this stage. Coding, if that still persists as well, you'd think that those, or is that being seen within the tasks? Are you finding that employers, for example, are looking for people who have that sort of capability of understanding within these specific roles?
Yeah, very much so. I think we haven't tabled it specifically as a job category, but if I build it into some of the data that we've seen, the data analysis is the word I'm looking for. That's all built into that IT sector. Software developers with the skill around AI are highly sought after. Last year, we did a report and it showed that the growth over the last 3 years in terms of the demand for AI skills was about 388%. Now, that was split into two parts. One part was us adapting to how to utilize AI within the workspace, so like you and me utilizing AI in our daily jobs. Mm. And there was a significant growth in the demand for that type of skill set coming through. But on the other side, there was a substantial growth also in terms of just the numbers of companies that we're looking for people that could actually go and develop their AI products. But again, that goes back to sort of your data engineering, your data analysts understanding the data and being able to then translate that into how they're going to form this artificial intelligence that comes out of that and the machine learning that comes from that. So really what I'm saying is that the data is built into some of these jobs of the future around software developers and the data analysts, data warehouses and so on.
Paul, we've actually been running a poll across the show this morning, and we've been asking the audience that's watching just what are they doing to improve their job prospects in 2026, really linked to this conversation for the most in-demand jobs for this year. I'm sure you can actually see that their upskilling comes in at 58% for all those that have been voting today, saying that that is what they'll be doing. They'll be upskilling more and then studying further. And maybe those two have, you know, many linkages, but not many are willing to change careers, only 8%. What do you make of this data, for example? And I mean, I know it's a very small sample size, but I suppose it does share some sort of insight.
I think spot on, and I'm really pleased to see this in terms of upskilling coming in at 58%, because that plays specifically to the point that I've made about the importance of the skills development. So that's really, really positive to see that. And I think everyone's recognizing that in an age where AI is threatening many of us in terms of the uncertainty of where we're actually going in our future careers. It's important that people are taking this seriously. In terms of changing careers, that 8% is lower than I would have expected, because generally speaking, people are wanting to move on and move up in their careers. This is the time of the year where a lot of people will be seriously considering what it is that they want to do for 2026 as a New Year's resolution, specifically around their career growth. And we see that the hiring season, as we call it, really kicks off in earnest probably from, I'm thinking from next week, really. So it's mid-Jan after the schools go back. And over the next 2 to 3 months, we'll see that there's going to be an incredible amount of hiring happening through South Africa as companies really just try to make sure that they've got the right talent to deliver the right projects for the balance of this, this financial year.
Yeah. Paul, let's just get to some of the comments as well, because some of our audience were able to share some comments on social media when it comes to what it is they're doing to upskill themselves. So let's try and read some of these here. Jake saying that start voting out parties that have done nothing to grow the economy in the LGEs later in the year. So I guess that's definitely one. I won't pose that one to you. It seems a little bit more political. Khabonewa says, good morning, team. I'm doing side hustle stacking. Times are rough. Instead of relying on one employer, I'm developing multiple income streams, such as private practice, consulting, and online teaching to increase financial stability and resilience. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that then, Paul, because one would say, are the people who are then looking for jobs on the other side, not just employers, are they looking for a second job or a second or, you know, vocational work, as it were? And are employers also willing to accept that too?
That's a difficult question to answer, looking at both ways that you've tabled it. But I think anecdotally, we can't see this in our data specifically, but there is definitely a trend for people to want to be able to take on that side hustle. Indeed, I'm aware of many people that are starting to do that. And I think, yeah, that's part and parcel of the entrepreneurial nature of us as South Africans, and just recognizing that we want to, in actual fact, have something that we can call our own. To answer your second question in terms of how do employers feel about this, generally speaking, not really happy about it, because when an employer employs someone, they employ someone for the full 24 hours of what they're paying for. And that includes the ability to make sure that that person can rest and recover properly and well enough to be able to deliver what it is they need to be able to deliver at their primary job. So when someone's taking on some extra work and therefore sort of cutting into that rest and relaxation time, it can be problematic for some employers. It's one of those things that are out there for debate in terms of what works and what doesn't work for individuals.
Yeah, just wondering, I think we might have just one more comment here as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, we'll try and see if we do have that and we can give that to you. Just, I suppose, towards the end of this interview, it's also about understanding that these roles are in demand now. There's an ever-changing environment that you've seen, and perhaps you can share this a few insights, if you will, over things that have changed, maybe over the last 2 years even, just to really show the basis of change and how much that happens, Paul.
Yeah, at a minute, what we're really seeing is that, sort of a focus on the jobs of the future. So your IT jobs, the green economy, finance jobs, caregiving jobs with your doctors, your nurses, your pharmacists. These are all things we can see that are sustainable and definitely sort of picking up demand and where we see job opportunities in the future coming through. We've definitely seen the decline in jobs that are repetitive in nature, where AI has been able to replace some of those jobs. And very definitely, just in terms of the changing times, things like the growth of e-commerce in South Africa, for example, has changed demand for cashiers. Bank tellers are down. Receptionist jobs are down. Admin jobs are, funny enough, down on one side, and that's the more generalist administrator, but up on another side where we're getting very sort of specific jobs coming in for administrators. So administrators within the financial services sector, and examples like that. So, we are following the trends that we can see are happening across the world in terms of that change in our workplace. And we expect that, then that change to continue over the next, certainly the foreseeable future. And I assume that we are accelerating in that change through until 2030 at the very least, and where we're going to just see more and more IT, more and more AI, and machine learning coming into place. What we've got to do as job seekers is make sure that we're adapting to these changes. And again, I go back to my point about upskilling and making sure that we are doing the right things right in terms of making sure that we are prepared for a change in our roles and understanding what those implications are going to be and how we can work with the change as opposed to trying to resist it.
Paul Byrne, really appreciate it. Thank you so, so much. I think really, really interesting insights there on the job market. As the year begins, and as you said, as hiring season gets into full flow as well. The head of insights and customer success at PNET, Paul Byrne, joining us for that one. Just to reiterate that poll here as well, Iman, when one takes a look at it, 58% people saying they're going to upskill. So I need to upskill myself this year. What should I do? What do you think?
Yeah, you can't play cricket because you said that was the other thing that you... not that you can't play cricket. No, I mean, teasing. As a career now, I mean, that horse is bolted. But anything else that really scaffolds some of your existing talents might be an idea. For me, I'm pursuing my master's, as you know, going to the research year. So I'm really excited about that. And it's great to be in a phase where you're learning and reimagining your life. So continue out there and hopefully you meet the success and, more importantly, the remuneration and self-satisfaction that you were aiming for, which we understand are the catalytic reasons why you would even think about this in the first place. All right. That said, I think someone who's closer to maybe having a career in cricket. Wow. I'm Aidan Kirtley with the final broadcast from the world of sports. Standing by.
On the ground in southern Mozambique, floodwaters have cut off roads, swept through neighborhoods and trapped families on the wrong side of the swollen rivers. In some areas, residents say they're unable to return home safely, forced to weigh the risks of crossing first moving waters against staying stranded.
I'm scared to cross here. We want to go home. Since the day before yesterday, we have been stuck on this side. We want to cross to get home. We have decided to take a risk.
Local authorities say rescue and response efforts are underway, though access remains a major challenge.
We are working, but we don't have all the data about what is happening now. This moment, we are making plans to go to the affected areas where there are people waiting to be rescued.
According to Governor Tule, the government has set up accommodation centers across most districts with support from partners providing food, water, and medical assistance for those evacuated. As national efforts continue, UN agencies warn the scale of the disaster is rapidly expanding. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, more than 500,000 people have already been affected by flooding across southern and central Mozambique, particularly in Gaza, Maputo, and Sofala provinces.
90% of the people in Mozambique live in adobe houses that basically melt after a few days' rains. Health facilities, roads, and critical infrastructure are also impacted. So far, the most affected province is Gaza, where I am today, with 64% of the affected people.
Orcha says the numbers are still rising as heavy rains persist and dams continue to release water to prevent bursting.
Nearly 5,000 kilometers of roads have been damaged across 9 provinces, including the main road linking the capital Maputo to the rest of the country, which is currently inaccessible. As a result, supply chains are severely disrupted.
UNICEF is warning that children face heightened risks as floods worsen. The agency says the combination of contaminated water, disease outbreaks, and malnutrition could prove deadly, especially in a country where chronic child malnutrition is already widespread.
We can prevent disease deaths and irreversible losses to children, but we need to act fast.
Mozambique is really a country of children and young people. More than half its population, around 70 million people, are under the age of 18, and the average age is just 17. And when floods and cyclones strike, as they have repeatedly and with increasing frequency over recent years, it's the youngest and children who are hit hardest.
With Mozambique entering its cyclone season, humanitarian officials say urgent action is needed to prevent further loss of life, particularly among children. Joy Kirukijuma, CGTN.
And it's not just Mozambique that has been hit. Communities in South Africa are also piecing their lives back together after devastating floods ripped through the Mpumalanga and Limpopo provinces. Nearly 40 people have been killed. Roads, bridges and vital infrastructure has been severely damaged. As CGTN's Julie Shino tells us, with a national disaster having been declared, it's taking time to get aid to the affected areas.
I'm standing on the bridge over the Crocodile River. It is just meters away from one of the entrances into Kruger National Park. Just days ago, this river was dangerously high, cutting off communities and driving devastating floods. The water has now subsided, allowing humanitarian aid to reach the affected villages and deliver much-needed aid to families. In Buffelspruit, in South Africa's Nkomazi municipality, residents are still coming to terms with the scale of the destruction left by days of relentless rain.
The rain was extremely harsh to everyone, so it's affected all the dams that is close by, and some of the children couldn't be able to go to school, some of the people couldn't be able to go to work, so we are affected, very affected, especially most of the businesses that are around here in my community.
We have lots of damage in Buffelspruit. There is a flowing here, lots of water, and in our house, we have a flowing damage at their homes. The rain is sabotaging too much.
While rain continues in parts of the region, floodwaters have begun to recede. Damaged roads are slowly reopening, allowing humanitarian organizations to finally access some of the hardest hit communities.
Some areas that we started off with in Mkhondo were really difficult because the roads were really badly eroded and damaged by the water, but there were parts where the truck was able to travel.
More than 500 homes were damaged here in Nkomazi, wiping out food supplies, clothing and shelter for families already living on the margins. In January alone, an unprecedented 400 milliliters of rain fell across Mpumalanga and Limpopo province. The government has declared a national disaster, but officials warn the full impact of these catastrophic floods may only become clear in weeks ahead. Julie Shara, CGTN, Nkomazi, Mpumalanga, South Africa.
U.S. President Donald Trump has ruled out the use of force in his bid to control Greenland, emphasizing a strategic approach rather than military intervention. He made the remarks during his speech at the annual World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland on Wednesday. He described the acquisition as simply a small ask for a piece of ice and claimed it would not threaten the NATO alliance.
We probably won't get anything unless I decide to use excessive strength and force, where we would be, frankly, unstoppable. But I won't do that. Okay? Now everyone's saying, oh, good. That's probably the biggest statement I made, because people thought I would use force. I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force. All the United States is asking for is a place called Greenland, where we already had it, as a trustee, but respectfully returned it back to Denmark not long ago after we defeated the Germans, the Japanese, the Italians, and others in World War II. We gave it back to them.
Trump also called for immediate negotiations for the U.S. to acquire Greenland from Denmark in his speech and continued to make his case that the U.S. needs to control the island for the sake of national security. He also expressed concern that Europe is moving in the wrong direction. Trump criticized policies focused on green energy and mass migration, claiming they resulted in record budget and trade deficits. His remarks come against the backdrop of strained transatlantic Arctic relations amid his attempt to take over Greenland, which has raised concerns among NATO leaders about the potential impact on the alliance. Denmark and Greenland leaders instead have suggested ways for a greater US presence on the strategic island territory of 57,000 people. Now, at the World Economic Forum, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney has cautioned against using economic integration as weapons. He warns the world is in the midst of a rupture rather than a transition.
Let me be direct. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. Over the past two decades, a series of crises in finance, health, energy, and geopolitics have laid bare the risks of extreme global integration. But more recently, great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons, tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited.
Dar Saleh is reviewing the old 2010 model Nokia phones that he just received after purchase 16 years ago. He still can't comprehend the situation.
I completely forgot about the mobile phones, so it was a very strange feeling when I received the batch. It was like a gift. I will give a few to my friends. They are obsolete and outdated phones, but I will keep them because they are like memories of that period. They have a sentimental value that I will cherish.
The supplier was unable to deliver the shipment, although the store is only a few kilometers away from Nizar's shop. A stark reminder of the impact of the conflict on trade and the economy in the North African country.
The economic situation deteriorated massively from 2014 onwards due to the infighting. Inflation and consumer prices hiked, and the local currency dropped from 1.4 dinar to the US dollar to 9.5 dinar to the dollar. The black market controlled the economy, and many businesses closed down.
Although authorities are painstakingly trying to restore stability in a country divided between East and West, there are signs of improvement, and it shows with Nizar, who moved into the auto market rather than the small mobile shop he had.
I changed the field because Nokia is not selling like before. I love cars, and the market is booming here. So I opened a car trade and maintenance center. I did so during the coronavirus period, and thank God we are growing fast.
It doesn't deny there are economic frailties that need to be addressed by authorities. Libya heavily relies on oil for its revenues, but unstable production levels and a drop in international oil prices are slowing down the expensive rebuilding process. But that hasn't dampened optimism.
There is a big difference now than before. There's a relative stability, so people are opening new projects. The market is growing. There's an increasing demand on different products and services. Traders and small businesses are flourishing.
With an abundance of oil and mineral reserves, Libya has huge potential to become a future economic powerhouse once total stability is restored. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo.
And with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Luis Eshimi. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place.